Why would you not have staff? Everybody benefits from staff to your bond making sure assessments are correct.
That's the reason I was talking.
The county database, so they don't have a square footage in there.
Well, I don't, she told me the venerable. They used to be.
Yeah, I went in there.
That was your city attorney.
See if I could find the.
And now, so this is, now they have.
So I'm actually following the trail.
I mean, there was a newspaper article.
Venerable, you're right.
Venerable.
Venerable, whatever they are.
My thing is the process, because
I think they're probably.
There's a defined process, and so we have tracked all of our documents. The one thing that I do think the city can do better is make sure that we validate.
I'm sure they appreciate.
Make sure they got what.
Yeah, because we actually just took it for granted that we sent the report, and we found out that we found out through this EGA process that the person that we've been sending these reports to has been retired for 2 years.
Yeah, Chris, can you hear me?
Who's getting these reports, and are they being forwarded to, so that's the, so, it's just a nice thing to just look into.
1 minute, please stand by, 1 minute.
To be fair and accurate.
Yeah.
If I could have everyone's attention, please, we're going to begin our meeting live on cable TV in about 1 minute. Please put your cell phones in their silent mode. Just look at the TV monitors and you'll see when we're live on cable. Thank you. Jennifer, you should only speak to the person sitting next to you. Okay. Okay.
20 seconds.
You just seem like a very vulnerable person. No, I do too. I like this.
This is very sharp.
This is a new opening for us. Good evening and welcome to the Monday, January 9th, 2012, Gaithersburg Mayor and Council work session. Tonight we have one item on our agenda, and it's the Johns Hopkins University Campus Master Plan, which is located just outside the city limits. And Lauren Pross will explain that to us, please.
Good evening. Thank you, Mayor Katz. This evening, David McDonough, the Senior Director of Development Oversight with Johns Hopkins Real Estate, and Elena Muir with Johns Hopkins Montgomery County will brief you on the Montgomery County Campus Master Plan. Mr. McDonough and Ms. Muir will be available to answer questions following the presentation, and I'll turn it over to them to get started.
Thank you very much, David and Elaine. Welcome, and thank you. Who's going to start?
I should have known that.
Yes, please,
start.
Get ready.
And thank you very much for inviting us to come this evening. We're very excited about talking with you and presenting. Just want to give a little background so that everyone realizes that Johns Hopkins has been here for 23 years in the county, and at this point we've already been in operation. We are doing a lot of work in the county. We're very integrated with the community, with the business community, government, and the people who live and work around us. We have 4,000 students, most of whom are full-time working professionals. We have 540 who are retired professionals. These are people who have been in government service, who have been in private industry, who have worked in the communities and the schools in our OSHA program. We have more than 400 part-time faculty and 20 full-time faculty, and we have large representation of Hopkins schools on the campus. In fact, of all the locations of Hopkins, we have more different schools all located together in one place than any other part of Hopkins. And as you can see, we have 50 part-time graduate certificate and degree programs from our Carey Business School, the Krieger School of Arts and Sciences, which here is primarily biotechnology, as it should be. School of Education, we educate a lot of the teachers and administrators in the school system, and the Whiting School of Engineering, Engineering for Professionals, where they learn, of course, engineering and also computer science. We are very proactive in the business community, that is, to take science and commercialize it so that it goes into the business sector, creates jobs, and brings opportunities to the people in the community. We're very interested in the role of the university and education in economic development. To focus on that, just one illustrative idea, we have the Innovate Entrepreneurship Program, which is part of the Carey Business School, in which we educate about 25 students per year. And they're primarily NIH and other postdocs who may have very good ideas for entrepreneurship. We educate them in the business side of entrepreneurship, of science, and we've already spun out 6 companies already, and we expect to have more in the coming year. We have a 3-year program that is funded by the National Science Foundation, but which will become part of Johns Hopkins when this particular grant runs out. We also have on site the Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, which is running a major study which is benefiting the community, studying 1,000 Montgomery County children. The emphasis will be on the effects of the environment on children over a 21-year period. It's the most in-depth program that NIH has ever funded, and we have our Montgomery County residents, families, participating in it, and they will benefit from the results, as will others. This is what I call our family portrait. In addition to our 4,000 students, we have 2 research centers, which are Johns Hopkins, one in the School of Public Health and the other from the Whiting School of Engineering, doing microscopy and serving the community and the business community. The rest are private research companies doing research in pulmonary research. Tissue Gene does tissue regeneration. Trubios works on clinical trials for a variety of diseases, including, I shouldn't say a disease, a condition of cancer. They assist companies going through the FDA approval process. We are helping to deal with, if not cure, we're trying to cure, but we can't say that at this point, cancer and a number of our programs. I'm trying to look at the different ones. I know them so well. We are helping them in ancillary ways to raise funding. Private raise helps people to advance their companies. We offer a lot of services in addition to the actual research that's going on. And in addition, in the fall or spring of 2013, we'll be opening the National Cancer Institute. If you come by the campus right now, it's the huge building that you see growing up. It seems to have grown up over a year and is creating a lot of interest from people who want to come and join us, because the National Cancer Institute will be with us. 42 departments, 2,100 employees will be there. We'll be doing a lot of research and connecting with them, hopefully, in the community. We're very interested in the scientists of the future. Our kids are our future. We have a program called Frontiers in Science and Medicine, which we run along with 12 or 13 other neighbors that we have in our neighborhood, companies, Adventist Healthcare. It's a wonderful consortium, and about 600 students each year come through. The current group was Lakeland Park and Ridgeview Middle Schools who participate, and you can see the kids are very excited, but more excited are the people who watch the kids. They go back to school and they insist on having more science. They've told their teachers, they've told their principals who reported back to us, they'd certainly like to expand the program if we possibly could, because it's hands-on and it's not in the classroom. It's real, it's life, and for that day, these kids are scientists. There's a familiar face. We also have the art of science and the science of art. You need both sides of the brain, and we cater to both sides so that we can create the workforce of the future, a very creative, knowledge-based workforce. 2012 will be the sixth year for our high school student art show. It's a juried art show. We have donated canvases to help us do this and to promote student participation. It's very highly attended and it's very competitive. As you'll notice, last year we have Mayor Katz with winners and Gaithersburg residents from the Secrets Art Show, which produced some very, very interesting canvases. In the coming year, we're going to have a science day for fourth graders, a bread baking demo for the first time, and about 800 fourth graders will participate in bread baking, which is a science. Concepts of chemistry and measurement are taught. They will have hands-on science in a very different way that's familiar to them because it's as close as their kitchen. We also have engineering innovation for high school students. Brownie troops visit the campus and coming into our wet labs. We have writing programs. We're very interested in advancing our students, and the school system is very responsive. We also have programming outside the classroom again. BioBuzz is a program with no program, no speeches, but people from the biotech community gather once a month. We get about 75 to 100 people each time. They exchange ideas, they create a buzz, they meet one another, and they work together after that because they've learned to connect. The advanced academic programs of our School of Arts and Sciences has an annual biotech research symposium. This one clearly is in connection with the military, with
It was U.S. AMRID,
this one was. We also meet with lots of emigre business representatives because we have lots of emigres who are very eager to get to work and to join our country and to be productive. They have a lot of great ideas, and we've been meeting with them throughout the year, come up with some very interesting business ideas, helping to make connections. We have a number of symposia. We had one earlier this year on malaria with our Malaria Institute at Hopkins and Scenaria, a local biotech company that focuses on malaria, and the National Institutes of Health were on the campus. Upcoming will be a symposium on global water challenges, focusing a lot on the water challenges in our own neighborhoods now, especially with a lot of building and construction, what we're facing. So we're working with the School of Engineering and WSSC on that program. We had had an India biotech roundtable with Open Health Systems Laboratory. We actually worked with the Indian FDA, with Indian NCI, National Cancer Institute, and worked with them with our National Cancer Institute from our campus. We just have a whole lot of different programs going on that are responsive to the community, including even we had chamber music series with the Baltimore Symphony at Strathmore. And now I will turn the program over to David McDonough for the concept plan and preliminary plan.
Thank you, Lane.
Switch spots.
Can you hear me right?
We can.
Great. My name is David McDonough, and thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, City Council members, for having us here. We very much enjoy the opportunity to give you an update on what we're doing on our planning within Montgomery County. Lauren, thank you for your introduction. There are four contextual background notes I just want to walk through very briefly before getting to the specifics of the concept plan, because as you know, Hopkins is an institution that Elaine just articulated. is seeking to advance education, research, and healthcare services. And it's important to understand how the planning work we're doing fits into that context. Because when you look at the Great Seneca Science Corridor Master Plan, and I need to make very clear that of the 900 acres, Hopkins comprises about 150 of it. We're one small piece of a much larger puzzle. And you look at the overall strategic objective of that plan, in short, really seek to advance health for the world. And you may ask yourself, well, what does that mean and how do they do that? Well, really three sub-objectives on the program context. Number one, how do we bring together the very best and brightest scientists from around the world? Number two, how do we facilitate and manage collaborations? And Lane just gave us a few examples, both to advance discoveries and to commercialize those discoveries. And how do we create a great place to live, work, and play? And I think probably one of the best, sort of most succinct translations of those objectives was that articulated by Dr. Harold Varmus at the groundbreaking for the National Cancer Institute, where he surprised everyone by coming to the front seats on a very hot September day with the governor and our senatorial congressional delegation and Hopkins presidents all wearing coat and ties. And this guy comes up to the front row wearing a spandex bike outfit. It's like, well, who is this? Well, it just happened to be a guy who has A, won a Nobel Prize, B, did the initial diagnosis of the AIDS virus, and C, led the decode of the human genome, one of the most brilliant scientists in the world. And he got up to the podium and said, we have two messages for you that relate to why he, as the head of the National Cancer Institute, the largest of all the 27 National Cancer Institute centers, was there. And he said, it's pretty simple. My job, number one, is to find a cure for cancer. And we cannot find a cure for cancer within the four walls of the National Cancer Institute. The prospects for finding a cure for cancer through collaborating with the University of Maryland, with Hopkins, with the private biotech industry is much greater, number one. Number two, his primary task as manager of the National Cancer Institute is to get the very best and brightest and most enthusiastic employees in the country to do the research. That is the mission of the National Cancer Institute. And he said, I really love the prospect of being within the Great Seneca Science Corridor Master Plan area because it will have transit, it will have housing, it will have retail, it will have the best science research facilities in the country. And that marriage of having top researchers and a great place for the young researchers to come live, learn, work, and play is really what the program context is. There's also sort of a process context, and just to put where we are today, and I won't bore you too much, but for those who had been exposed to this in the last years, we know with a project like this, the county's gone through a visioning stage. What is the vision for this master plan, which is now done? Number two, what is the plan to convert that vision? And number three, how do you convert that plan into an executed action plan? And the sequence where we are today, we're just finishing up the planning process and just beginning the implementation part. And the third context is just within Montgomery County's planning process, there are four tiers. The first is the master plan, which we'll talk about briefly. Second is what we're really focused on tonight, a preliminary plan and a concept plan, which we'll go into those in just a moment. Following that, a site plan, and then finally a building permit plan. We're really just on the second of those four stages now, the preliminary plan and concept plan. So with that background, let's walk into it. And everything we do starts with the county's master plan. And just for context purposes, we're going to be talking about the great, We're talking about the Great Seneca Science Corridor Master Plan area. I assume everyone is well versed with the perimeters of that area. Is there any questions about where that is? If we start out with Great Seneca over here, with Muddy Branch, Darnestown Road, Darnestown over here, Shady Grove, Key West. Does everyone know the context we're talking about? Great. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about within roughly this 900-acre area, I'm not including Crown Farm, so we're not looking to sort of bring that into this part of it. What was the old Life Science Center was this little area over here with Adventist Hospital in this sector. It's now been expanded, and that was roughly 275 acres, which now been expanded to include a much larger area, around 900 acres I've mentioned, of which Hopkins has about 50 acres over here in our Montgomery County campus, and about 108 acres over here in our Bellward property. And I'm going to start just talking about sort of our Montgomery County campus. And as you mentioned, that our Montgomery County campus is in what the master plan refers to as LSC Central. It's really the core area for Life Science Center to begin with. And in a moment, we'll come over here and talk about Bellward, which is an area called LSC Bellward. Key to the whole master plan and key to our concept and preliminary plans is this black dotted area, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, is the Corridor City Transitway recommended alignment. And it's within this context of these 900 acres and the 27 million square feet and the mass transit and the mixed uses that our particular concept plans and preliminary plans start out. And again, if we're just looking at this little section over here, and if we take that section from the master plan, this is a section over here, lays out very simplistically heights, roads, and other requirements that you would expect a master plan to lay out for individual property owners to move from a master plan to individual preliminary plan and concept plans. In this case, this is an excerpt from the master plan itself where it's going through the heights. And it's a little hard to read this, but the darker, I guess sort of salmon color, would be 150 feet height over here. The slightly lighter color over here is about 110 feet height. And then the lighter color out here is about 50 to 110. Our focus and our concept plan is just this area over here. And as you'll see in a minute, all we did is really take the parameters established by the county and apply them to our property. This is the existing campus layout as it exists today. Elaine had mentioned, you may be familiar with our existing buildings over here today. And you may be familiar if you've driven by recently with the new National Cancer Institute property over here and the parking deck that's underway. And again, that campus has 41 acres and it's currently zoned, or previously zoned at a 0.5 FAR for about 900,000 square feet. This is just a different graphic that shows the same buildings, a little bit clearer, but with a focus on the National Cancer Institute. And what's interesting to note is that while construction started in July of 2010, it took us the better part of 3 years to get to that point. People sometimes ask us, well, what are you planning on doing these different campuses? I mean, what's going to happen tomorrow? And the message I'd like people to understand is we started the process in pursuing the opportunity to work with the National Cancer Institute 3 or 4 years ago. These things do not happen overnight. We're thrilled to have the result we have. And as you look at the timeline, we're thrilled to have construction underway this July. We're thrilled to have it go through the construction process, and we can't wait for the scientists to arrive in late 2012 or 2013. But to get the very best and the brightest and the best scientists in the world, it takes a while. This is part of the concept plan, and all this does is take those same colors we just looked at a minute ago, just take these heights on this part along Key West and Brochard, and over here by Medical Center Drive, 150 feet, 110 feet over here. And all it does is take those exact same dimensions. This is Brochard over here, Blackwell Road over here, Key West, Medical Center Drive. It takes the same dimensions from the master plan, these height envelopes, 150 in the blue and 110 in the yellow. And the planning board asked us to go through an exercise to show how you would fit buildings within that envelope. These are purely illustrative, but this is an illustration of the building heights and massing that we have proposed in the concept plan that's been approved by the planning board. This is the road context. And one of the things which we didn't bring it tonight because we want to keep this relatively brief, and like going for hours on this topic, but what is important is that in the county's master plan, they've laid out a brand new road grid for the entire master plan area, where in this case, Key West would be a primary road, Blackwell Road would be a secondary road, as would Brochard, and then our intra-campus roads would be tertiary roads. And each property owner needs to take their land and make sure in your concept plan that you put forth engineering plans for both primary, secondary, and tertiary roads consistent with the county road standards. So everyone has their little piece of the puzzle that when complete, all the puzzle pieces fit together to come up with a brand new road grid. And this is simply laying out in the concept plan those roads and how they comply with the county road standards. It also points out, very importantly for us, is the location of the Corridor City Transitway station within this particular area, within the LSC Central neighborhood. It also points out something called the LSC Loop. One of the objectives the county had was to make sure that there would be pedestrian and bike access to the campus, and this is simply noting, excuse me, the yellow, the LSC Loop that goes through the entire master plan area and how it links to our campus. You take those heights and those roads, stormwater management, and put it together in this particular component of the concept plan, and it just really illustrates what the concept is. How we have taller buildings, how we have the roads, how we have the CCT, how we have pedestrian and bike access and open space integrated into the plan. The status of our Montgomery County plan, again, we start with the master plan that was approved in May of 2010 by the County Council and by the board in June. The plan itself was approved by the preliminary concept plan. Again, if you think of the four steps, master plan, concept plan, the concept plan itself is approved on November 10th, and the next step will be a site plan when we have a building ready to propose. We do not at this time have a new building ready to propose, and it should not be a surprise to anyone since we just got the planning board approval a little over a month ago. Turning to the Bellward campus, same notion. We start out with the county's master plan laying out the parameters for us. In this case, we're looking at that portion of the master plan, which is LSC Bellward, this area over here in the pink. And again, just reminding everyone that this is about 108 acres of the 900 acres, one small part of a much larger puzzle. We then go to the master plan and take from the master plan, just as we did on our Montgomery County campus, the building heights that are laid out in the master plan. In this case, the darker salmon is 150 feet. This particular section over here. The lighter colored area is a fairly fine gradation in colors here, but this is the second middle tier over here in these colors, and that's 110 feet. And then the lightest in the perimeter would be 50 to 100. And oftentimes the question's asked, when you say 50 to 100, what does that mean? What it means is that when the county went through the master planning process with lots and lots and lots of community meetings, one of the things that came out from our neighbors here in Mission Hill and Washingtonian Woods was that if you're going to have density around a transit station, please have that density furthest away from our residential areas over here and have it closest to the already more commercialized areas. So if you think of this as sort of a tent post, the highest areas in this sector, and it steps down to the middle tier, it steps down to the lowest area here, and even though this permits 50 to 100 feet in that section, think of it in terms of a wedding cake where the outside perimeter is really limited to 50 feet and it steps up to 100 as you move further away from those perimeters. This is what's in the master plan. All we simply did was to start out with, in this case, is a cover sheet from our concept plan. Now, before going to the massing for a minute, actually let's go to the massing, then we'll come back to that. Let's stay with this for a minute. One of the things that came up in the context of the planning conversations was a preference that the neighbors had for the design of the buildings that would be compatible with the residential character that were surrounded by on three sides. One of the things, and I happen to love HGS, but one of the things they said, please do not put in a large glass steel building that really is not compatible with our character of our neighborhood. We had no problem with that, and we started out as we progressed through here with the design architectural vocabulary to be that which is, we think, very much in keeping with our neighbors. It also happens to be consistent with the Hopkins character for our campus. So we start out again in the concept plan with existing conditions. This is an existing farm. It is very important to point out, because sometimes people think that, well, you're just starting de novo. No, we've been approved since 1997 for 1.4 million. And a 0.3 FAR here. It's just the plan that was approved was not one that we would remotely call green. It was about 80% covered by parking lots. It was something that didn't really relate at all to today's research world. This is the massing plan that came from the master plan. Same notion. In this case, the green is 50 to 100. And again, the lowest areas, close proximity to the surrounding residential areas over here. The mid-level areas here, 110-foot height in yellow. And then the highest areas over here in blue, 150-foot height maximums, furthest away from the residential areas and closest over here to the existing commercial developments. This is the road network. And again, the old plan had three points of entry. As you know, in traffic planning, the more means of ingress and egress, the more cars can be distributed, the less likely there is to be traffic congestion coming forward to it. The old plan really didn't make a whole lot of sense, even for the 1,000,004. So at this point, there is now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 points of ingress and egress. Also, within this plan, of course, the CCT is central. And this is just showing the CCT as it goes through the plan. And the other dotted areas are pedestrian paths. And again, on the bike side of things, this is the LSA loop that the county has for the entire master plan area for biking. And this is just showing the connection between the LSA loop and our plan. This is, I think, a particularly important composite picture of the massing, the building, and the roads. And it's important because the prior plan, as I mentioned, was about 80% lot coverage, the predominant of which was surface parking lots. We have, I believe it's something in the neighborhood, about 48% now is open space. We think this is one of the greenest, most sustainable campus plans that we're aware of. Not only do we have the length of a football field as a buffer on this side, just 300 feet, 100 yards from here to here, for a 12-acre public park. We also have a 200-foot buffer between ourselves and Mission Hills, which will be a forest preserve. We also have a 60-foot preserve called the Darnestown Promenade on Long Darnestown Road, in addition to a 10-acre preserve for the historic property that exists there today. I'm not sure how many proposals you have coming before you where someone proposes a plan where nearly half of the property is going to become public space. We provided nearly 50% of our entire land area to public space. Why is that? We go back to the programmatic objectives. If we're trying to advance health, we're trying to attract the best and the brightest, we're trying to have scientists collaborate, we're trying to be good neighbors and have a great place to live, work, and play, we think we have a campus like this, which will be an open campus, is a way to achieve those objectives. The status of this plan was, it was approved, the master plan, of course, same dates we saw before. The plan itself is approved on November 2nd. There's a 30-day appeal period, so effectively it's approved December 2nd, so it's been approved as a little before Christmas. And the next step will be when we actually have a user to come before the Implementation Advisory Committee and the Planning Board, of which Lauren's a member, so she'll be the first to know, with whatever plans we have for that campus. That's pretty much it. We'll be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Well, thank you very much again. Thank you for being with us. And who would like to ask some questions, please? No questions?
Well, first I want to commend Hopkins as a community partner, both for the for a lot of your programs, but I certainly heard wonderful feedback about the Frontiers in Science program from families at both schools. Mm-hmm. And appreciate that you guys are doing that. Certainly a program near and dear to my heart, the Gaithersburg Book Festival. Mm-hmm. Hopkins is an integral partner, and that partnership is growing, and it's much appreciated. I had a couple questions. The first one is about the CCT, and in your, from what you've heard, where are we with the CCT? What is Hopkins doing to advocate for the, to bring it to fruition at the moment?
A great question. There are lots of things that are occurring, some of which Hopkins is involved with, some of which we're not. For starters, and tying it back to the concept plan, the preliminary plan, we had to dedicate the right of way for the CCT, both. Let me go back a little bit. If this is too slow, we'll do this without the benefit of visuals. But for this plan, for our Montgomery County plan, we had to dedicate a right-of-way along this part of the campus to the CCT. Likewise, for the Bellward campus, we had to dedicate the right-of-way all the way through here for the CCT and over here. So number one, we're giving land to the right-of-way to the people developing the CCT. Number two, I'm not sure if I brag about this, but along with Jennifer, I'm a board member of the CCT Coalition, and I've had the great pleasure of serving on the county executive's countywide RTV task force, which includes state representatives, government representatives, industry representatives, and as well as many different citizen groups. And the reason I mention that to you is because when you look at transit, we think that you need to look at it both in the context of the CCT, within this case, the Great Seneca Science Corridor Master Plan, but also within the larger context of the county. Because one of the issues of having a transit-oriented development is making sure that you can make the best transit linkages between people and their jobs. And while we certainly hope we have a great number of scientists that are living within the Great Seneca Science Corridor Master Plan, we also understand and recognize that within the county, within the city of Gaithersburg, et cetera, that there are a lot of people who will need to get to and from their work through mass transit. So we think the CCT is important. We also see the countywide sort of effort being important. To your specific question, our understanding is that the governor is scheduled to make his determination of a locally preferred alternative, i.e. what will be the alignment and what will be the mode, sometime this spring. The date keeps moving, but we keep hearing sometime in late February, early March. And in that context, I would note to you that it's also my understanding that the county executive had asked the state to prepare a study looking at the economic impact of the two modes, one being the light rail, the other being rapid bus. The state came back with an analysis that said the cost for light rail were so extraordinary relative to the bus rapid transit mode that the likelihood of implementing that sooner was not very high. Therefore, the light rail would be implemented way later. The bus option would be implemented way earlier because it's more affordable, and the economic impact of that was quite substantial. As a consequence of that analysis by the state, the county executive has sent a letter to the county council asking for their support for moving forward when the governor does his LPA to support what starts out as something called BRT, which you're familiar with, but which the county transit task force refers to as RTV, which is a rapid transit vehicle. And so our hope is that when the governor comes forward with his LPA, his locally preferred alternative, and talks about these alignments, he'll also be advocating for this mode, which is RTV. And if I could just give you a minute on that, because people sometimes ask, well, will it be metro or will it be a bus? And the task force has made it very clear from their perspective, it's neither.
That's right.
It is a hybrid. It is essentially a metro on wheels, which is what a rapid transit vehicle is. Its characteristics are, number one, fully dedicated and curbed rights of way. So you're not sharing the road with cars. As some members of the task force say, the minute you start doing that, take the rapid out of rapid transit, okay? So fully dedicated and curbed is characteristic number one. Vehicle characteristics, number two, are extremely important. And that's why it's very, very important that people understand that it is not metro and it's not a bus, but it's really a hybrid, because the vehicle itself is really fabricated along the same lines that metro is. And why is that important? It must have side-opening doors on both sides. Why is that? We're looking at sort of station stops that are less than 10 seconds. You cannot do that with a single point of entry. You can do this with multiple doors on the side, and it's been very clearly demonstrated both in Eugene, Oregon, in Orange County, and Cleveland. You can achieve that speed of sort of stopping, starting when you have that type of vehicle. The third characteristic is having level boarding platforms with pre-boarding fare card systems. So you pay for your ticket, you wait on the platform just as you would for Metro, it comes along, doors open, you get on and you leave. So when people talk about will it be a bus or light rail, it's neither. It really is a hybrid, which is why the term rapid transit vehicle has been embraced by the County Executive's Transit Task Force, and we hope that when the governor comes forward as an LPA, he'll also be embracing that. Does that answer your question as to the status of the CCT?
More than answer. I could have asked a more focused question, which was really how involved are you guys directly in helping us advocate for exactly that? We're like Hopkins, the city of Gaithersburg has been dedicating land for the CCT for many years. I think almost all of it that's within the city is already dedicated. We want to see it come to fruition. We're all on the same team, and if there's an effort that you guys are involved with, and I know Marilyn Balcom and Jennifer Russell are in touch with us, if there's the CCT coalition needs our assistance with anything, we're always ready to be involved with that.
We're very pleased to hear that. We are 100% behind it. This whole plan is transit oriented, and as you know, there are staging requirements within the plan that currently have a freeze on the plan at 400,000 square feet unless you've been previously approved until there is funding for phase one of the CCT from Shady Grove to Metropolitan Grove. So we like to have it there just because it achieves the objectives of the science and research and attracts the young people, but it's also essential just to move forward with the whole plan.
Right.
And we agree with the county executive and everyone else that it should be rapid transit. And of course, we always said that it shouldn't be called bus rapid transit either. I mean, it just changes the concept. But we certainly stand ready to work with you in any way we can. Anybody else, please?
Yeah, let me jump in here. I had an opportunity with National League of Cities to visit both the Research Triangle in Raleigh and the big campus down in Huntsville, Alabama. And of course, you know, getting traffic, getting people in and out is the key to everything. Both of those had interstates. They did not have the trains or even a rapid bus. So, but they're also not as dense as this will be ultimately because we're in a 5 million, you know, population area as opposed to those other ones. Have you all considered putting together what they would commonly refer to as a business investment district where the people on this campus that come in, all outside companies other than John Hopkins, that would also pay some money towards the development of the rapid transit? Because, you know, everybody needs to pay their fair share, and I think if we want to get it in reality, you know, the state's not going to build it. The feds are not going to, you know, they don't have the money, but collectively everybody does. And since John Hopkins is the elephant in the room on this particular one, they will bend over backwards to accommodate, you know, the university. So if you could put together some program, I don't know if it's already been started or talked about, but that would be one way to address it, is to get some local investment as people come in. It would probably move the plan up ahead of we would be tickled to death about that because we have our own interest in the CCT with our areas. And since most of this will probably be staged around it, like we have projects that are staged around the CCT, the sooner we get it built, the better we all are. So anything you can do along those lines would really, really be a step in the right direction.
But we completely agree. That's a great idea. And part of the county executive's transit task force has a finance committee, which I'm not on. But as part of the general committee, we were honored to have Henry Kay from the state at the very beginning of the process come explain where the state is. And there are two or three salient points from that presentation. Number one, that in order to get federal funds, it's essentially a 50-50 match between federal funds and state funds. And oh, by the way, the state transportation fund has $0 in it, so don't hold your breath. Point number one, it goes to your point, think locally if you really want to move this forward, because there's a lot of money there to achieve those federal dollars, at least in the near term. Who knows, the state legislature may do something with the gas tax this session, but that, you know, with a hope and a prayer may work, but that's really not a financially sound basis to move forward on. Number two, he mentioned that the process to go through federal funding is a very long one. Unfortunately, they spent a lot of time so far going through the environmental reviews, but whether it's small starts or other transportation department programs, it's a multi-year process. And I don't think we can wait a multi-year process for that. Mm-hmm. The reason I mentioned that to you is because I think the task force is looking at a model exactly along the lines you're talking about. which is how do we come up with a delineation, and this is for the countywide system, but part of that would include the CCT. How do you look at a perimeter, whether it's a half mile or a mile or whatever it is, that surrounds the transportation lines, and how do you look at a special purpose tax district to tax the people there, including ourselves, who are also the beneficiaries for transit, and how do you have special purpose bonds whose debt is amortized through the payment of revenues from that special purpose tax district. It's really no different than the bid district you talked about at RTP and other places. But that's a great idea, and that's one of the ones that the County Executive Task Force is absolutely looking at.
Sooner or later, reality has to set in, and we got to get the money for it. But one of the things I will share with you is that it's only been about 2 years ago, I was in Huntsville with their big new campus, and I'll tell you, success breeds success. And they have some of the most dynamic companies moving in now because, you know, to use the vernacular, the big guys like to be around big guys, and so they have attracted other companies, and it's now become a very, very successful. And of course, it's just across the interstate from that whole space complex. So, it's a very, very dynamic area, and Huntsville now is touted as one of the better places in the country to live, and I think they were in the top five because of it. So you're on the right track with these projects like this.
And of course, the clinking process makes sense. Just one little footnote from the County Executive Transit Task Force. In Orange County, it is a BRT line more than an RTV. They had forecasted ridership, I want to say somewhere, I don't have the actual numbers right, so this is really an order of magnitude rather than the actual numbers. But they're looking at ridership somewhere in the neighborhood of like 20,000 within like the first 5 years. And they're anticipating 6,000 in the first year. Within the first 3 months, they had 25,000 riders.
Wow.
And so people sort of underestimate the demand for efficient, effective, quick, and comfortable transit.
And the fact that you've dedicated land already, and not only you, but others, certainly helps a long way for cost. I mean, that's certainly part of the cost of what anyone would have to do to build it. Anybody else?
Yeah, I think that's happened, that underestimation of the use of public transit and rapid transit is, I don't know why it persists everywhere. It happened in St. Louis, it happened in San Diego, Portland, Cleveland, Denver, everywhere. So hopefully, since the staging requires, before anything happens on Bellward, that be financed and a start. Hopefully that's coming sooner than later. I think one of the things that people have been interested in addition to the density that's proposed for these two sites, LSC Central and the Bellward campuses, is the mix of uses that you're going to have at these various sites. And it was sold primarily as a research and technology development with a mix of some related and associated commercial. And the residential was going to be somewhere else. Can you give us a breakdown of that mix of dedication to lab buildings or the square footage or percentage committed to laboratory research space as opposed to other commercial space and residential, if there's any? I don't believe there's any on either of these two sites, right?
Right. No, and the I would like to give you a very specific answer to that question, mm-hmm. but I can't, because what the master plan asked us to do was to go through at both campuses and lay out our best guess for what we thought the allocation would be, primarily among three classes, one of which would be commercial R&D lab, one of which would be retail, and one of which would be residential. For Bellward, it's very simple, zero residential. And so it's really an allocation between R&D, life sciences, and any supporting retail. And I forget the name of the shows, but there's some modest amount of retail for basically people to eat and dine, so they don't have to get in their cars and go someplace for lunch or dinner. And so that's predominantly sort of all lab and other sort of research and educational medical uses. For our Montgomery County campus, where residential is allowed, it was the same exercise, coming up with some estimate of sort of the commercial / R&D office versus residential retail. I should know, but I can't recall what the percentages are of those. So unfortunately, I can't give you the exact answers for that because I don't recall the numbers. But I think they're laid out in the traffic study for the Montgomery County campus.
I don't think we actually have specific numbers. We're talking about kinds of space that we have. but in terms of we're not designating one-third for this, one-third
right.
for that. We don't have it. We're very much market-oriented. We're working very much inside of Hopkins right now. The more people who come to talk with us and the more the county and the area are receptive to us, the more Hopkins scientists and faculty are interested in what they can do here and how people can join Hopkins at this location, which we're very interested in having happen. But now with NCI and the excitement inside of Hopkins, other people are coming to talk with us as well, and we're looking at people who will meet our mission. So whatever we do, we'll be dealing with education and science and research that will advance the mission, which is essentially delivering of science and health systems that will improve life and reduce suffering.
So will there be any dormitories associated with the Bellaire campus at all?
No.
Nothing like that? All right. Okay.
Now, and again, if you step back macro, again, think of the master plan, the preliminary plan, mm-hmm. are really a very broad blueprint. Where are the roads? Where's the massing? Et cetera, et cetera. And the preliminary plan takes it down another notch into both the architectural elements, which we see in front of us here, as well as civil engineering. And as we mentioned with the National Cancer Institute, you really can't begin looking for the users until you have entitlements in place.
Right.
And between Bellaire, which was effectively approved the first week in December, and MCC, which is now in the process of filing, it's just occurring right now. So you're asking us to sort of forecast what's out there. And certainly it'll be all consistent with the objectives of the life science plan, but it'll take a long time. And one of the things that Hopkins does not ever do, we don't go ahead and build buildings speculatively and see who comes. We find users first and then work from that.
Which makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I would also just note, again, if I'm going off too far off your question, sort of to say, David, go on to a different topic. As Lauren has sat in the Implementation Advisory Committee, it's really been interesting sort of seeing how the master plan has helped to spur the opportunity for more development. And you make the point very appropriately that really we're not the major source of residential users. But as Lauren, I'm sure, may have explained to you, mm-hmm. that just within the last 6 months, since this master plan does permit mixed uses, residential and retail and commercial, not on our land, but we start out with the property that was formerly the B&A site that has 735 units, another property behind it in the executive office park for another 500 units, over in Danak's property for roughly 500 units, and the county is came out with their RFP for the PSDA for another 2,000 units. And if you step back a little further to look at some of Steve Fuller's regional growth forecasts and how we try to compete within this region, he sees among the major constraints for growth, particularly for younger people, is sort of affordable housing for worker as well as transit. And absent that housing, we hear it all the time from employers, mm-hmm. I'm sure you hear the same thing, where they really want to sort of grow their workforce, but the young postdocs who are earning $40,000 to $60,000, $80,000 cannot afford a $650,000 house, and they don't want to spend 2 hours commuting from North or Frederick from some other place. So having just that initial spurt of housing projects coming out of the master plan, we see that as a very healthy element of the growth. And of course, if you combine that with what you guys are doing in Crown Farm, we see a very, very robust and healthy growth in the growth towards a real research community that does have housing and retail and research all transit oriented. So we're very optimistic about the future.
I think most of us and probably a lot of the community members who are interested or concerned about the project are pretty familiar with the master plan. So the most recent change is the approval of the concept plan. And there's some of the illustrations from that in here. And I know with concept plans in general, some of the drawings are illustrative and not binding. But can you summarize what is formalized or determined in the concept plan that wasn't included in the master plan? So what step has been made forward since then? Or steps or
again,
pieces?
Again, I'm going to be a little bit repetitive, but it's almost like the little Chinese doll sets that one doll
yeah.
fits in the other. Everything we're doing fits inside the master plan. So nothing that we have done is new or outside the master plan.
No, but what I mean is, no, I mean, but you're going more detailed in the process. What
sure.
I mean, there's a point of having a concept plan.
Sure.
It's not the same as the master plan.
Right.
So what is included in the concept plan that wasn't, in, I don't mean that you're contradicting the master sure. plan, just how have you moved forward?
Okay, all it is, and what we did include, which we're welcome to get back to if you want, is these images are primarily of the concept plan and not the preliminary plan. The concept plan, in my vernacular, is really sort of more the architectural presentation of the concept, as opposed to the preliminary plan, which is the engineering line drawings for roads and utilities. And all that we provided is progressively greater detail. What you have in front of you is the concept plan, which is the architectural presentation of the concepts for that campus. The preliminary plan would give you the civil engineering drawings for each one of these roads. It would give you the stormwater management positions for each one of the stormwater managed drainage areas and that type of thing. And all it is just an engineer's level of detail for where the roads, stormwater management would occur.
Okay.
That, you have a furrowed brow. Does that answer your question? Doesn't answer your question?
Well, I guess it's probably not possible to answer this way. I mean, I understand that that's what those plans are about, but we don't have any of the information.
Well, again, just by way of example, if you look at the concept plan, what we were encouraged not to bore you with was to go through and show you each one of these roads have different road standards. There's different rights of way. There's different dimensions for the sidewalks. There's different dimensions for the green space. There's different dimensions for the road itself. There's different dimensions for parking. The preliminary plan goes through in engineering detail for each one of those dimensions for each one of these roads.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, as you doesn't really show up here very well because this is just the concept plan. Now, none of these really show it very well. The stormwater management plan for this campus, which is part and parcel of the approved preliminary plan, is subject to the new stormwater management standards. So rather than seeing a large stormwater management facility, in the preliminary plan you would see a lot of detail over lots of different little stormwater management sort of catch basin areas throughout the entire campus, including along the roads, et cetera, et cetera. It's just way more detail than what we have here. And we're glad to get that to you if you'd like to see a copy of it. There's nothing to hide.
Through the county, right? I mean,
yeah. It's all a matter of public record. We were just told we thought that'd be too much detail and bore you to tears, but we're glad to bore you to tears if you'd like to have a conversation.
So, okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I realize, you know, all of the previous caveats and disclaimers regarding the nature of a concept plan still apply here, so I apologize if, again, I'm asking you to speculate. But
sure.
In an ideal world, as we are all strong advocates of transit, you know, 100% of the people coming in and out of this property would be using transit, but we don't live in an ideal world, and I was hoping you could talk a little bit about not necessarily the traffic studies that were part of the master plan, but your vision for the traffic flow on the Bellward campus, and you know, where you see, how you see parking as a part of the vision. I'm assuming that some of these buildings, which might be of a different hue on the concept plan, might be designated for structured parking, for example.
Sure.
And if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yep. Let's start out with sort of the traffic flow. And again, we have a road network plan, which we're glad to give to you. But basically, if you were thinking about, we start out with sort of the idealized mode splits. And I'll tell you what was idealized versus what was in the plan. The idealized mode splits would be 25% of the population would live and work in the same place, would either walk to work or bicycle to work. 25% would use mass transit, the CCT or other public transit. So half the population would not use cars. Half would use cars. Now that's the idealized mode split. I think the mode splits that finally got translated to the plan, unfortunately I don't know off the top of my head, but I think we need to get something closer to 18% sort of mass transit use before we can move on to stage two, predicated on sort of advances in the CCT going forward. But on the on the car side of things, if you think about the ICC and you think about Sam Mike Highway and you think about distribution, again, I'm sorry, I don't have the road network distribution, but the theory is that there are, again, this primary road network that comes in, these being primary roads through here, again, assuming that there are job centers and residential centers within each one of these neighborhoods, the car transportation plan is to have traffic come in through the primary road network through here, get distributed through the secondary road, and then redistributed through the tertiary road network in each one of these road grids within each one of these sectors. When people are coming to work, and do the same thing reverse, feed from these tertiary, secondary, back to primary, and back out again. Now, does that answer your question?
In terms of the flow, what about in terms of the parking?
Okay, parking, you're correct in that when you looked at, probably this plan shows it best relief, each one of these gray areas are structured parking garages. Mm-hmm. And part of the nature of the density, whether you look at that image or this image, it was how do you come up with essentially a green campus where you have 50%, 48% of the campus that's green and open before you even get to green roofs and set up with these buildings over here? Well, for starters, you cannot have surface parking. And again, that was sort of one of the enemies of the other campus. Huge sheets of impervious surfaces that's sort of very harmful to the environment. And that's why the notion of having it nearly half green is much healthier for the environment. In like fashion, you cannot have surface parking lots. So this is structured parking, structured parking, structured parking, structured parking, structured parking. Again, these are illustrative diagrams, and there should be, well, you can see that here, the actual language on this, the diagram for illustrative purposes only. And that's really what the county asked us to do. If you have the height parameters they've established, show us how you would fit a 1.0 FAR into those height boxes. We understand that when we have actual users, then would it look like this? Probably not. Look like this? Probably not. But when we have an actual user come in, then we come in with a site plan that shows what the actual uses would be. Now the roads will stay the same because the roads aren't going to change. The utilities aren't going to change. The stormwater management facilities are not going to change. But the actual size and massing of these buildings will change. Does that answer your question regarding parking?
Yes, thank you.
Trenchett?
One of the things that's going to really happen is that if you think about it, on the north side of this campus, you have Crown Farm, which is coming on board with housing. You have Kentlands, which is already established. You have Watkins Mill and Clarksburg, all on this CCT line. If all of those houses come to fruition, there's going to be a great number of those people working here, living there. So mass transit is really going to, and that's just on the north side. The south side will tie into Shady Grove, and there's a major housing development going in there in the next few years. You'll find that the mass transit will probably surpass all of your expectations once all those things come to bear fruit. I mentioned one time, sort of jokingly, that from our Crown Farm, if you build a direct path for golf carts and bicycles, you probably get 1,000 people to ride back and forth. I mean, and I said it now, but I think it's more real now because it's not that far a distance, and it really does help. You go down to Florida, all the roads down there use golf carts now, and you go to all these new retirement places, they all use golf carts. I mean, that's just another viable method to get cars off the road. So I think all of a sudden it may make some sense, you know.
Ours would have to have snow tires. Yeah. So anybody else?
Yeah, I was.
Well, actually, before we miss that point, though, one of the things that came out of the planning process, which is exactly that, one of the questions that was asked in more than one community meeting was to ask the planners, and they did, a reasonably good job with this plan, but certainly need to dovetail with your plans. They asked us to think, and the county to think about, the pedestrian and bikeway networks that exist in places like Reston and Columbia, Maryland. Because the notion was, people said, well, hold it, we live either in Crown Farm, or we live up the road over here and here, but we don't feel very comfortable biking down, you know, Key West or Great Seneca. How can we begin thinking about exactly your point? How do we put together sort of very pedestrian-friendly bikeways, walkways, when we thought about golf carts, but ways to make it easier for those people to use non-cars, in some cases not even mass transit, to get to and from these areas. Again, we think that Jim Rouse did a great job in Columbia, and Gulf Western did a very nice job in Reston, thinking about those networks. But obviously, this is county planned land, and we're adjacent to your planned land. my hope would be that the planners can work together to have biking and bike path linkages. I think that's a great idea.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so David, you had alluded at the sort of at the beginning when looking at the concept rendering of the green areas as public spaces. Mm-hmm. Is that your vision to have those areas open to anybody from the public who wants to come and use them?
Well, it's not our vision. It's prescribed in the 39 conditions that came with approval. And so this is a 12-acre publicly accessible park. But to be clear about it, because we don't want to sort of be anything but clear, this is land that Hopkins will own. It's land that Hopkins will develop as a park, and it is a land that Hopkins will work with the county permitting agencies for public use. Now, why is that? Now, if I already ask Elaine if she would be indifferent if she has a research lab here and this were a fully public park and the county high school marching band decides they want to practice there, that would not be compatible with our uses. Not that we want to be exclusive, we just want to make sure that people we have uses that are consistent with the research functionality that will occur at the campus. And the other part, which we think is a really lovely synergy, is that I'm a little bit biased because I've been coaching youth soccer for 24 years, but we think when you think about different modes to facilitate collaboration among and between scientists, sports is a great way to do that. Whether it's soccer or it's squash or it's frisbee, getting people out of their labs and meeting different people and doing things that they don't really normally meet with is a great thing. Not that I'm advocating alcohol, but sort of at Genelia Farms, one of their major assets in their campus that they'll tell you, and again, it's not my point of view, I'm just telling you, it was basically the Genelia model was a bar. To be able to get people sort of out and mixing with their research compatriots sooner rather than later. So yeah, this is a 12-acre park over here available to the public. This will be a series of paths and walkways, which I think is illustrated over here. These are all pedestrian paths that are open to the public. For this is really more the forest preserve area over here, open to the public. All these dotted lines are pedestrian paths. Bellward Commons is open to the public. And again, along Bellward, Darrington Promenade, also open to the public. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else?
What will be the uses of the farm buildings and et cetera? Those are
it's a great question. And yeah. Elaine knows we're meeting with some people tomorrow. We have so many people asking us for uses of that. And so having just gotten the entitlements, we're just beginning to sift through how that makes the most sense. I know that some of the basic planning principles that we want to make sure are adhered to is if this is going to be sort of the town commons, how do we have uses there that really are A, 24/7? I mean, the last thing we want to have is a commercial use that shuts down on weekends at nights and doesn't really provide a town center. How do we have uses that can help complement the research functionality of the campus? So those are really the tests we start out with. How do we make sure that it's open 7 days a week? And how do we make sure it complements those uses? And there's a whole array of activities from recreational to educational to cultural to things like farmers markets, et cetera, to meet those tests. And we want to be very thoughtful for how we find what uses there, because that's a very key part. At the really heart of the campus.
But what we're also doing now is actually talking to people in the community. They're calling us, they're asking us, and we're listening to their ideas because they may be thinking of things that would be important to the community that we haven't thought about. So it will be a communal process for deciding what's going on there.
Okay. And is it and the intent to preserve all of the buildings on the farm site now?
Again, not,
I mean, there's a large dairy barn, correct?
And that, yeah, you know, there. I maybe answer your question too promptly. Is our intent to preserve all the buildings?
Yes.
Part of the 39 conditions, the approval is to make sure we have a 10 plus acre area that is forever kept open for the farm area over here. We're still working with the historic people to figure out which of those buildings are historic and which ones are not. There have been a number of surveys. Clearly, you know, the barns and the house are historic, but there's, you know, for example, we built for Mrs. Banks a 1970s, 80s ranch residential property, which we don't really see as anything historic to, so that would probably not stay. There, so we really need to finish the historical survey of those buildings to figure out which ones make the most sense to move forward.
And are those buildings in good shape? The barn and the original, I guess it's the original house that you'd be talking about.
Yeah, the original house is in good shape, but again, it really depends on the uses. Mm-hmm. When we were before the planning board, there were some people who came and made suggestions about doing this or doing that in the barn, and a number of the planning board members says, guys, you have to understand, this is a wood frame beam construction building. No electricity, no plumbing, no insulation. This is like a Appalachian Trail hut. And so it's not something you walk into and say, great, let's put an art museum here, because it will take a lot of money to retrofit that for use. I'm not saying we can't do that. Just people look at it and say, great, well, let's put in X, Y, and Z. Well, you guys, it's just a wood plank building.
Hmm. Anybody else?
Yeah, I just wanted to take a minute to finish where Judd started off tonight, and thank you for your work as a wonderful community partner. I actually had the opportunity to attend Frontiers in Science and Medicine Day this past year, and it was wonderful. I spent an hour or two with the kids going from station to station, had a terrific time. And as we continue to discuss and debate these land use issues for these properties, we certainly want you to know that we really do appreciate the fact that Hopkins is a wonderful engine of science and education and economic development in our area. That doesn't mean we won't have input as the land use debate continues, but we do it in the spirit of consensus and trying to do what's best for the city of Gaithersburg and the broader community, and I just wanted to thank you for coming out tonight.
And Enrico, with regard to what you just said, we're hoping that if you hear from your constituents of activities or things that they would like to have on the campuses, either of them, please let us know. Probably through Robin is the best way to do it, because we really do want to know. We've been asking people, and people have come forth, but you're in a good position to be in contact with them as well.
Well, you should have Kathy come to your water challenges symposium, that's for sure.
Yes, she's quite an expert. She really is.
Can I ask you to think about an extension of the idea? We think that the Lanes program with the other property owners, Frontiers in Science, is a fabulous idea. But we're also thinking, in the process of creating a true community, how do you, and I know this word has very prejudicial sort of connotations to it, institutionalize it. What do I mean by that? We look at Northeastern University in Boston as a great model. Why is that? I don't know if you're familiar with Northeastern, but it's a 5-year undergraduate college program. 5 years, not 4 years. Because every 6 months, every student goes on a 6-month fully paid co-op. Well, why is that relevant to this conversation? It's relevant because Northeastern University has established a communication linkage between nearly every employer in Greater Boston, whether it's government, whether it's the universities, whether it's private industry, and through that linkage, there's a great exchange of students and employees. Now, why is that relevant? The city of Philadelphia, I went to the University of Pennsylvania as an undergraduate, has a calculated strategy to offer as many internships as they can possibly offer to the kids from Penn and Temple and St. Joe's, all these other places. While they have all these bright kids sitting in Philadelphia for 4 years, they want to basically nab them. How do they nab them? They give them, offer great internships, so by the time they graduate, they stay there. Well, there's no reason why we should not employ that same model. So we think about building off the Frontiers in Science model of having a network of all the employers of the students, whether it's Montgomery College or Hopkins or Maryland, it doesn't make any difference. So our best and brightest can find their way to job opportunities as easily as possible. So we can have the best and brightest from this part of the world provide opportunities here and deliver. And Frontiers in Science is a great first step in that direction. But we need to think about how we build on that model and expand it to really create a really truly sort of related community.
Okay. Anybody else?
Well, the way that was kind of why I asked about dormitories.
About what?
Dormitories, because as one of the features, or one of the challenges, I think, in internship programs is when students are off-site or working in somewhere not associated with their university, but for a period of time, extended period of time, they do need a place to live. They need an inexpensive place to live that's safe, clean, and usually within walking distance of where their internship is, so something like that. It makes sense to me that would be one of the considerations that Hopkins might be making, or even University of Maryland.
Or the other users. Again, yes, within the plan, there's provision for 9,000 housing units.
Mm-hmm.
Zero single-family, multifamily on Bellward. That leaves lots of other places, whether it's across the street in PSTA or in Crown Farm or at DANAC or at the B&A site, lots of different places for it. So we completely agree. Yeah. Having residential offerings for either students or entry-level workers is really quite essential to make sure that we can attract them and they can find a place that's affordable for them.
Right. Well, you know, we have that problem at NIH. We have a very good summer program. And we invite students from all over the world, all over the country, to participate in that program. The biggest problem for attracting them and confirming their stay for a summer, 10 weeks or something like that, is someplace where they can live. So, you know, that's just going to be the same kind of challenges here. But I think you've described a reasonably good scenario for how that can happen. So.
You know, a real quick follow-up to what you just said, Dan. If you look at University of Arkansas at Fort Smith, Arkansas, they have a similar program that Lane talked about where they're sharing, but they actually do it with high school students. And high school students are working on the campus and getting college credits on some industrial matters, and you know, it's almost like a vocational, but there's a very wide variety of schools. But they also have a nursing school there that is second to none, and my wife works for doctors, had never heard of it, but they have 100% certification upon graduation, and almost unheard of in that school. So University of Arkansas, and then the other one is Arizona. University of Arizona is doing something called innovative technology, where they're working like you're talking about, where they actually have programs and contests and then they have incubators for the graduate students to form businesses and do things like that. So those are things that I'm sure you all can collaborate, or you probably know some people that from those schools, but those are good people to tie into.
These are all the kinds of things that we're working on and thinking about. We have people from all over the world coming now to talk about doing exchange programs for both faculty and students, but from high school to undergrad to graduate school. All this is possible because the county has given us the opportunity to create such a campus. And we're welcome. People are coming every day with ideas, and they are similar to what you're talking about, and we're looking at models. Please keep suggesting these things, and you know, send us an email or something if you have a particular place that we can look at and benchmark against.
And of course, someday there's going to be a high school site right there. There's going to be a high school in that high school site someday.
In Gaithersburg.
And I'd also keep in mind that looking at the context we're talking about tonight, we were talking about land use.
Right.
There's a whole nother conversation over applied and translational science. I think some people in this room may have been part of the county's bioscience task force that said, okay, it's nice to have land use for buildings, but it's also essential to understand how the scientists work together both to come up with discoveries and to commercialize those discoveries. And there has been great progress made really under the leadership of the county executive to advance that notion. That's a whole other topic for another time, but the notion of the strategy for advancing discoveries and commercializing discoveries separate and apart from land use has been absolutely part and parcel of this whole planning exercise, and it's extremely exciting where that's going.
And let me put in a pitch for not only the county's efforts but the city's efforts as well while we're talking about it, because we certainly have our fair share of those efforts as well, whether it's with our accelerator program or mm-hmm. you know, our other economic development toolbox programs. So we'd love to work with you and others on that as well.
And Ryan, if I gave you the impression that it's county-centric, that's incorrect. Because one of the first things when the topic came up within Hopkins, our president said, unless this weaves together Baltimore and Montgomery County and College Park, et cetera, we're not going to play. And he's very focused, and as you know, that science and capital and good ideas do not respect municipal boundaries, for
That's
better
true.
Or worse. And we're really trying to advance the science to advance health, and wherever there are good ideas and whether there's money to grow them, we're all for that. And we'd love to work with anyone who's in that space.
Okay. Is there anyone in the public that would like to speak on this topic? I don't think that there is, but No.
It has to be Jennifer.
Yeah, yeah. She's in the public. Well, then you're going to need to come to the microphone. We'll bring the microphone to you. And you know that you have 3 minutes, and we're timing every second of it. Go ahead, please. It's on.
Jennifer Russell with Rogers Consulting. I was just going to add to what David said about the CCT backing up a half an hour or so, that that right now the county executive has approached county council about sending in a revised joint recommendation to the Secretary of Transportation and the governor. And to that end, I think it's January 19th, the T&E committee is going to have a session on the CCT and BRT, maybe absent the B, but the agenda still says BRT. But that would be a good opportunity, at least for the city, to listen in. And I know that the coalition is going to be there as well. That's January 19th, 3 o'clock at T&E.
January 19th. Okay. Thank you, Jennifer.
Jennifer, and I think it goes to the full council on the 24th.
Yes.
Okay.
That's
preparatory. Okay. Anybody else?
Just
go ahead.
The quick comment on that, that the city's position has always been that by consensus we preferred light rail but would be support rapid transit if it made it happen sooner. So I don't think we need to change our position.
And I think the reality is that we know it's going to be not light rail, whatever, rapid transit or whatever it's called. Do we have anything further this evening?
Can I just ask that, I think you will all do this anyway, but let me just ask formally that as the next phases in the plan implementation go forward, whether it's a preliminary plan, a site development plan, and so forth, to the extent that you are giving heads up to you know, certain stakeholders, we would certainly appreciate that. I know Lauren's probably going to hear about it anyway. But, you know, if you're doing press releases and that sort of thing, we're obviously going to hear about it as well. But as you're gearing up, if there are folks that you're telling, hey, you know, next week we're going to be filing, we certainly would appreciate that heads up.
And part of the process, as Lauren well knows, is that written into the master plan is a legislative requirement for an implementation advisory committee,
right,
of which Lauren and I are members.
Yep.
That committee requires presentation of all plans to it before it goes to the planning board. So I know you asked in advance of that, but you'll certainly get it through Lauren.
Right.
And to the extent we have things in ahead of that, which is probably unlikely because the first time we'll present will be the first time people here, will let you know about it.
Okay, great.
And I think we like to operate very transparently. Sure. And anything that people want to know, we're glad to talk to them about it.
Well, it might be nice to have updated presentations on an annual basis.
We'd be pleased to do that.
Okay. We would be pleased to have you. We did not have anything further. Please note that next Monday, January 16th, is obviously a holiday and City Hall is closed. Gaithersburg is proud to once again partner with Montgomery County Tacoma Park and Garrett Park for a day of service and tribute in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. For information, please contact the City Manager's Office at 301-258-6310. Our next regular mayor and council meeting will be on Tuesday, January 17th. At 7:30. Thank you for being with us. We are adjourned. Okay. Thank you all very much.
You can pick me up or we're gonna meet later.
I can pick you up.
Do you know? If you don't know, I
don't.
Okay.
I don't.
Are you going to Annapolis?
It's my intent, but okay. I have a doctor's appointment before that, so.
Do you know if anybody else from staff is going? I know Mike is going early.
Tom's going, but he's staying overnight. So
well, we can get you back.
Because
I think we'll have
well, we should. But the question is, how many people we need to make sure they can have a space.
Right
to
now, tentatively, I'm planning to. Okay. But I just don't know how that doctor's appointment's going to go. That's,
we'll have to figure out this closer.
I think we'll need 2 cars.
Yeah. Probably.
Well,
okay.
I think so.
And I was you're going to drive it.
No,
I don't know when I'm going to go out.
So we can't come in your car.
Well, maybe not. I have to decide when I'm going to go.
Well, we can't come
in your car. Until I decide, so which will be tonight, because
thank you.
I have to go to the...
Not that, I'm not saying there's a problem. I'm just trying to clarify.
Yeah, to try to figure this thing out.
Yeah.
So Jason Lasky called and said, long list to be a delegate. Eventually, I didn't find it.